Welcome to Buckets in the 503. I'm your host, Nawan Thompson. I'm here with my co-host,
Curtis Williams. Welcome back. This is get these episodes back going. Get ready for the season. We have probably one of our best episodes. I'm looking forward to it. The head coach of Western Oregon, Ryan Orton, the only D2 school in the state of Oregon.
Welcome, Ryan. We appreciate you taking time out your busy schedule to come out here. We know your season is about to begin, and you're doing a lot of coaching right now, so thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, appreciate it, fellas. It's great to be here. Good to see you guys again.
So for listeners who may not know your story, how did you get into coaching?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, my dad, I basically grew up in a gym. My dad was a high school coach for a ton of years here in Oregon. Probably his longest stint was at Crestwell, just a small town outside of Eugene. And so really, I thought my career path would be one of just kind of following his footsteps, being a teacher at a secondary school and a high school coach. And then as things would progress with my own career, I had a chance to be a graduate assistant. It's kind of how I cut my teeth in coaching. And when I was kind of thinking at that point in time what direction I wanted to go, just have stayed at the college level ever since. And so here I'm entering year 27. It's flown by.
Listeners may not know you are actually born and raised in Oregon, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's definitely a huge plus is when it comes to helping recruit local kids to Western Oregon. What are some of the mentors that influenced and helped you shape your coaching background and coaching philosophy?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, it's a long list. I think growing up, I think obviously my dad being a high school coach, I mean, he's been a person I've looked up to in those formative years when I was a younger guy, just seeing his teams play, being ball boy, and they had a pretty good program at Crestwell at the time. So it was almost like a yearly thing that I didn't know about. I thought the state tournament was just something that just happened every year. I didn't know you had to qualify for it, but he had some pretty good teams. And so I would say him, definitely. And then just other coaches I played for, my college coach at Eastern Oregon, I stay in touch with him all these years later. He was kind of the one that actually made the comment, like, you know, maybe you should pursue the college route versus the high school. Just he used to put me with the recruits when they would come visit. And so he always thought that I did a good job of selling the program and just selling our players and the experience they'd have if they went to Eastern Oregon. And so definitely he's a mentor. And then just guys I've worked for over the years. I started with Steve Aggers, just talked to him the other day. He was the first guy that hired me as a GA, and then moved on to some other coaches that, you know, I had worked for. Ray Giacoletti. I was at Eastern Washington for two different stints. And then Coach Hills, who's an Oregon guy, he lives in Texas now, but he coached in the state of Oregon for many years. And then just some of the high school coaches, Coach Adams, Coach Douglas, guys that I met when I was a camper and then later on a counselor at Cascade Sports Camp.
I know as an early coach, you know, there's a lot of ups and downs and kind of getting your feet wet when you first start out. What were some of the lessons that you learned along the way as an early coach that you take with you now?
Persistence. And I think just being adaptable, really. I mean, that's something that, you know, sometimes, you know, young coaches or guys that are interested in going into the profession, you know, you see on TV, whether it's pro or college or, you know, there's a lot of high school games now on as well. And you see the games, but you don't really understand if you haven't been in it for a long period of time or in it at all, like all the things that go into just that game, making it that, you know, that game. And so, like, I think just being persistent, adaptable, I think when you're young, being able to understand, like, you may be on the move a little bit, you know, as you're trying to figure out, like, where's going to be a good level for you, a good situation. So I think when I was young, just kind of adapting that early, and I had really good mentors that kind of helped me with that too.
I know you're a brand new coach of Western Oregon. It takes a while to build a culture and a winning program. How would you describe your vision and the culture that you want to instill at Western Oregon?
Yeah, I think that's great because we've been talking about that a lot with our players. You know, I think our vision is one of development. I think that's a big thing that we talk about with our players all the time. And it's not just player development. It's more of a three-tiered approach in that we want to develop our guys as a person. We want to develop them as a student, and we want to develop them as a player. So that's kind of our vision. And, you know, we talk a lot about basketball as the catalyst that, you know, brings us all together. That catalyst being basketball. But now that they're at campus or they're on campus, we're going to do life together. So I think part of my vision is like, hey, basketball is only a couple hours a day, but we want to do life together and help develop you in some of these other areas as well.
When you say life together, you mean like a team bonding type stuff?
Yeah, some. Yeah, I mean, we went on a team retreat back in September over to the Oregon coast, but more so just the day to day, like getting to a point where our players feel comfortable with us as people. They take away kind of our titles, and they're comfortable with us just doing life together. Whether that's someone struggling with something that's life related, or that's first time away from home, so they're dealing with some homesickness. So like, we want to do life together in terms of like just what life presents on a day-to-day basis. Definitely there's some team bonding things that go into that, but just we're only on the court two and a half hours a day. We want to just make sure our guys are understand that we have their back as they're going through the day-to-day.
You know, a lot of kids that we talk to, you know, everybody has that dream of going D1, which is tough in this type of environment that we're in now with a lot of transfers and things happening. And so you see kids, you know, say, hey, I'm going to go to the JUCO level to make it to D1. What are the benefits about being at the D2 level that people don't fully understand?
Yeah, great question. I think one of the biggest things why I've stayed at this level, because I've been at the junior college level, I've been at the Division I level over the course of my career. And I think one thing that really resonates with me about the D2 level is there's less of a haves and have-nots in terms of, you know, you get to the Division I level and it's with the NIL now and the TV contracts and everybody in men's basketball is competing for one national championship. It's a little different in football because you have the two divisions, FBS and FCS. But at Division II, there's not the TV revenue that really separates like the different levels of Division I. So what I've been the most like committed to the Division II level is you can offer athletic aid, so you can get high level players. But then there's not the separation like there is at the Division I level. Everybody has as good a chance to win a national title at D2 as someone in the West region or the East region or the Midwest or the South, because there's not really a great separator there.
And does NIL money play into a factor at the D2 level like it does at the D1, or does it not hold factor at all at your level at D2?
It's starting to come in. Yeah, there's definitely some programs and some schools that are beginning to make that a part of their package to kids. I think that's why you see a lot of Division I transfers, especially the last 3 to 4 years, 5 years maybe, that have really started to realize, like, not only can I transfer down to D2 and play right away. You used to have to, you know, when you transfer, sometimes you'd have to sit, not necessarily transferring down, but when you would transfer across, they'd have to sit. That's gone away at the D1 level. But now they can come down. They can maybe look more for what they're, you know, being an impact guy. NIL is starting to creep into some different programs. And then there are different programs across the country in terms of like marketing that kids can now have where they, with their social media, create like their own brand to sell their own merchandise and things like that, that I think is more prevalent at the D2 level than the D1. But that's another way that kids are being able to kind of take advantage of things.
And is that something that your program offers to kids when they go to your school, like as far as opportunity to do branding on their own and get their own marketing and social media stuff out there?
Yeah, we just, Chris, one of my assistants, just has been working with Influxer, is what it's called, which is a national kind of platform for schools. And we have that. We're not requiring it of all of our players, but it's a way for them to put on their like shirts and sweatshirts with their name, image, likeness, with their last name and their number and stuff, and they can put that out on all their social media platforms. And if friends and family purchase things on their site, their personal site, then they get a percentage of all those sales.
What do you think is the biggest transition for players going from high school to college?
Yeah, that's a good one. I would say
On the court and off the court.
On the court, off the court, yeah. I think on the court, or excuse me, I'll start with off the court. I think depending on where they end up going, there's a good chance they're going to be out of their own home, right? And so there's a transition of going from like your parents or your guardians to now you're having to try to add a layer of like what it's like to do life away from like what's comfortable. So I think sometimes the kids, that process, some kids are able to adapt to that earlier than others, but I think that's a real big one. And that goes back to the type of people you have in your program to help newcomers kind of navigate that a little bit, both teammates and coaches. And so I think off the floor, that's probably the biggest one I've seen. On the floor, I would say like from an intangible standpoint, it's learning how to like compete every possession at a higher level and talking. You know, high school kids, most practices I go to, you might have one or two kids talk in the practice, but like at the college level, it's expected that everybody on the court is communicating, and not only communicating, but doing it effectively. And I think a lot of high school kids, one, they're young, right? So they have kind of a, they're trying to be accepted socially by their teammates, but it's like, you got to talk. And so that's an intangible. On the floor, in terms of physical, like measurables, I think it's like what most coaches say. It's like the just the bigger, faster, stronger, and just adapting to like the speed and the strength of the game, I would say, is the thing that they probably take some time to level up to.
So when you're out on the trail, you know, recruiting kids, what type of things are you looking for beyond stats in highlight films?
Yeah. You know, for us, like, that's one of those things where, like, when I talk to coaches, it's like, do they love basketball? And most of the time, you know, if they're a higher level player, they've committed to it, right? And they're making the necessary sacrifices. But do they love the game? But more importantly for us, like when we're looking at prospects, is do they love the process? Because you're only going to have, let's say, for example, this year we have 31 competitions. That's what's guaranteed. Now, if we earn more because of how we do throughout the season, then we'll earn more competitions that move us into March. But we have 31 that are guaranteed, but we have 7 months of training. So it's like a 7-to-1 ratio, right? And so do they love the process? Because if you don't love the process with the competition so few and far between, it just becomes more of, they lose kind of that love of what they're doing. And so like, that's hard to measure, but like, that's something that we really look for in the recruiting process of kids that fall in love with the process.
When you talk about the process, because we all heard the Joel Embiid saying, right, the process and that sort of thing. And so when you talk about the process at the D2 level or any level, right, I don't know if it differs or not, are you talking about just being in the gym? Or are you talking about the whole thing as far as weight training, eating? And what does that process look like at Western Oregon?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I think ours is kind of all-encompassing. You know, I make the joke to our players, like, if you want to be in our program at Western Oregon, like, if you come here, you get to work half days, you know. And that, at first, they kind of look at me. They don't know how to really react to that when I say we're going to work half days. But I just tell them, remember, half a day is 12 hours. And so, like, it's one of those things where when the process is strength training and diet and rest and treatment and working on your game outside of the hours that we're allowed to be with you, you know, when you start adding all that up and the fact that they're still a student too and they got to do studying and go to class and all that, you realize, like, when I say half a day, it's pretty, you know, we'll start days at 6 a.m. and finish at 6:30 p.m. We'll start days at 8 a.m. and finish at 8 p.m. And so, like, there's just, if they're not committed to the process, it can get very long for them. And then it becomes more, I have to, then I get to.
And one follow-up question to that. So when you know, I've heard of different programs to where they kind of allow kids and they just kind of expect them to sink or swim in the process to see who they're going to keep, who's going to come out of that, out of the waters and rise up. And then I've heard of some programs where it's a little bit more supportive, where they're giving them, saying, hey, this is your diet plan. This is what you're eating. This is where all the protein is. this is when you should go to sleep. We're waking everybody up at this time. How hands-on are you and your staff with your players in that process, or do you allow them to sink or swim since they are young adults?
We're as hands-on as we need to be. It varies for, like this year, for example, it's new for everybody. So we're super hands-on with all of our players right now. Now, the hope is as we move forward and we have returners and guys that have been in and they kind of know what the expectations are and how we do things, then it may not as be hands-on for them. But the hope is, going back to the vision about the development of our players as people, as students, and as players, like our returners kind of take some of the torch from the coaches on that. This year, it's not the case because it's new for everybody. But as we move forward, it's like we'll be as hands-on as they need us to be. Right now, it's pretty hands-on with everybody, but we do everything from diet to rest to everybody's got a player notebook. We quiz on the notebook to make sure they're studying it and learning all the things about our program.
What type of things are in this notebook, the player notebook?
Yeah, we have everything from what like our program information is. So like how we need to approach meetings, how we, our demeanor on campus, how we do things in the community, you know, how we want to do things when we have recruits on campus, you know, practice standards and protocols and timeliness being a thing and what our core concepts are, discipline policy. And, you know, we went over that and I was like, hopefully this is the one and only time we talk about it, right? And so, and then we have sections in there that are earmarked for like our plays, our set plays, our defensive schemes, situations, sideline out of bounds, some of those things. And then just handouts, things like when, coach, when you talk about like rest, what does that look like? Well, let's give you a handout and talk about it so that you understand. We say 8 to 10 hours. This is a Stanford study. I'm not a rocket scientist, but I know Stanford's pretty good, right? And so like if they're doing a study on sleep and athletes, then we probably need to follow something so that we can educate them on all that stuff.
Can you share a story of a player who's you seen made the biggest jump in development at the college you were at the time?
Wow. Yeah, coach, that's a good one, man. I mean, the first person that comes to mind, I think, would be a kid named Dimitri Saliba. I had him, it's when I was a head coach out at Western Wyoming. He came to an open tryout. We didn't know anything about him. He was from West Valley City, Utah, which is kind of a suburb of Salt Lake. We didn't know anything about him. 6'2", maybe 6'3", guard, left-handed. Came to the open tryout. This was after our first year. We weren't very good out there from a record standpoint. And he kind of like he just showed out. And I was like, Are our main players having an off day, or is this kid like pretty good? So we invited him back to follow up a couple weeks later. He did the same thing. So we offered him, you know, what we had to offer at that time in terms of aid and things like that. And he came out, and over the course of the 2 years he was there, not only helped us turn our program around, like we were 9-21 my first year. He came as a freshman, what would have been my second year, and we went 18-13 his freshman year, and then we went up to 24 games his sophomore year. And he was a big part of that. Ended up signing Division II, finished his career at Colorado Christian out in the Denver area. But just seeing his growth and development and some of the things that we're talking about here, how he kind of just threw himself into all that, and to see how good he got is one of many examples, but probably one that really resonates with me because I use him as an example to this day.
And we know you have like a deep history, you know, in Oregon, and your dad coached here. But the, you know, obviously the landscape changes and different coaches. So right now, like how connected are you to like the local high school scene and the AAU scene in Oregon basketball?
I would say it was something I've been trying to be intentional about in the state. I mean, I'm biased because I grew up here, right? And I played high school, and I was lucky enough to play college in the state. So I've always been biased about the state of Oregon. When I was speaking at the Oregon Coaches Clinic last week, that was one of the things I talked about. Is like I have a lot of pride myself in the level of basketball in the state, and so we're going to be intentional about recruiting it. And that was one of the things when I got hired in April is starting to reach out. I mean, obviously, you guys, Coach Williams, he was one of the first guys that I talked to, and then tried to get up here in the greater Portland area, not only to get myself back engaged in the state because I've lived my adult years outside of the state, but like try to get our program back in kids' ears and you know, doing some elite camps and trying to get to as many AAU events and high school practices and open gyms we can is something that we're going to continue to be intentional about. I think we've started off on a good path so far, but we're always going to be trying to enhance that as best we can.
Already you've signed a couple Oregon kids. Jared Stanley played AU with us in the spring. He's over there making strides in his development. And you have Graham Eikenberry,
yeah,
right? Former Lincoln High School standout. Mm-hmm. Didn't you get Noah
Ogoli?
Yeah, Noah Ogoli, who won a state championship at Tualatin. Also, he has at least three kids, right, on your roster from Oregon so far. So that's definitely a good thing to see. You staying local and getting local kids on your team that's going to attract other kids from the state. But I got a question for you. So, like, typically in Oregon, 1 to 5 kids go D1 every year, even though that's everybody's goal. With the climate changing, what's your message to Oregon high school players who think D2 might not be good enough for them? Are they overlooked? D2 when it comes to their goals?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, everybody's path's different. I think with the way that things are in college men's basketball now, like, you know, Division II is becoming almost kind of a junior college for Division I. I think if kids have an opportunity to play right away, I think they need to take a hard look at it. And regardless of the level, it could be junior college, could be Division III, NAIA, Division II, obviously Division I. But like, I think sometimes if a kid is being recruited and he's had a lot of playing time at the high school level, my recommendation is like, go and check it out and see how high a level it is. I mean, NAI is a high level, Division III. I mean, any level of college basketball is high level. I think some of the things where a lot of the levels other than Division I, where kids don't know about it, is because it's not televised and it's not on social media as much as like the Division I level. So I just encourage guys to like, go to some elite camps, go check out a game, and then just be open to being recruited to all those levels. It doesn't mean that you have to stay at that level. I think things nowadays are pretty much year to year. I mean, I look at the top players in the GNAC, which is the conference we compete in, and over the course of the last 3 to 4 years, guys who have had eligibility, who've been a first or second team all-conference guy, most of those guys have transferred up to Division I. So it's not an end-all be-all. And if that's really what your goal is, maybe your path is just going to be a little bit different than maybe someone else from your team or your league or whatever the case may be.
When you say, you know, go check out some games, I know last year me and Curtis were, you know, happened to be at the same game of watching some NAIA competition play. And, you know, I was even shocked at how good and how big those players are at that level. So, you know, it's definitely something I think a lot of players should do, is go watch some college basketball at different levels to really understand like what it is at that level. And then, you know, maybe take a look at what the preseason workout looks like and see if they can stomach that before they try and judge and say, I'm a D1 player. So definitely agree with that. But you did talk about the transfer portal a little bit, like if guys are first team or second team, they tend to transfer up, or maybe some guys transfer down. How does the transfer portal change the way that you recruit and build a roster going forward?
Yeah, I think for us, I mean, I can't speak for, you know, all the programs at our level. I know for us, it's a part of it, but it's not all of it. And I know that I know there are colleagues of mine that they don't really recruit anything other than transfer portal kids. And that's fine. That's their decision. That's the philosophy they take with their recruiting. It's a part of it for us, but it's not all of it. Again, going back to, you know, our vision about development, like we want to take some high school guys. If there's a positional need and we feel like they meet what we're about, that's the big thing, is positional need. They meet what we're about as a person. And then to help balance our classes. And I know it's year to year, but I also feel like the best programs that I've been a part of or I've coached against or have been in myself as a player are ones that there is some retention. You know, there is retention year in and year out. Maybe not as many players as you would like to have, but there is retention, so that, again, going back to like just some stability in the program and knowing what's expected when those new guys do come in. So transfer portal is part of it, but certainly not all of it.
What advice would you give to players and maybe parents hoping to get noticed by college coaches at any level?
I guess it's easier said than done, right? I mean, but like, just be open to all levels and understand that everybody's path to where they want to go is different. I think sometimes, you know, and I've obviously done this a while and seen that, you know, when I first got into recruiting, you recruited the kid and the high school coach. And then it changed maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, where now you recruited the prospect, the high school coach, and his AAU coach, because AAU's gotten bigger and bigger. And maybe like right before COVID hit, you know, now you've added more layers to who you're having to recruit. So now it's the prospect, the high school coach, the AAU coach, and the parents. And the thing I try to tell parents is like, this is your son's life. This isn't your life. And I know that can come across maybe a little callous or harsh, but like at the end of the day, you know, your role is to support them, not live through them. And so I think, you know, as harsh as that might sound, I think that's the kind of the approach we take, is we're just very honest with parents about where we expect them to stand with players in our program. And then with players, we just like, hey, this is your decision. You can go through these other layers of the people, but at the end of the day, it's going to be your decision. So live with it and own it.
No, I think that's some really good advice for players to kind of, you know, take ownership of their decisions. And, you know, even though they have the people around them to guide them to the correct decisions, right? And kind of help them through that process. Ultimately, it is the player's decision on where they want to go and which coach they feel like they connect with the best at that next level.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I would add to that, guys, like just thinking about that, like we've had some visits this fall and stuff, and like kind of what you're talking about is like we want to pick up where the parents have left off, because they're going to be spending more time with us than they're going to be spending with their family. You know, even if they're local and they're in state, they're going to be on our campus way more hours of the week than they are back home. And so like, I think as honest as I am with parents about them, their role as supporters, it's also, we want them to feel comfortable that their child is going to be in good hands. They're definitely, you know, they're going to be challenged. They're going to be stretched. They're going to be made uncomfortable at times. But at the end of the day, like, they're going to be cared for too. And that's all part of, again, just kind of what we're about.
Getting into more of your coaching philosophy and your game approach, what type of things do you emphasize during your practices? Like, is it the fundamentals? Is it more of a defensive culture, more of an offensive culture? Like, what is your coaching philosophy for Western Oregon, or what are you trying to establish going forward?
Yeah, that's awesome. I love to talk about that. So like for us offensively, our tenets are, you know, we want to be unselfish, efficient, and take care of the ball, regardless of what our tactics are. And our tactics will change from year to year based on our personnel. Like I think the greatest ability for our players after availability is coachability. The greatest ability for what I believe as coaches is adaptability. You got to be adaptable to what the strengths of your players are. And so like for us, we have tenets and those aren't going to change. So we want to be unselfish offensively. We want to be efficient, work to get good shots, define what good shots are. And then we want to take care of the basketball. Defensively, our tenets are to be communicative, which is the act of communicating, to be connected as best we can, because you guys know as coaches, the more that you can unset a defense, the better chance you are going to be able to get good shots. And then we want to corral rebounds, right? So we want to be communicative, we want to be connected and corral. And so those tenets don't change. Now the tactics might change from year to year based on the strengths of our personnel. So, you know, for example, one year we might be a 4-1 motion if we have a really good post we can play to and through. Other years we might be more of a ball screen if we have really dynamic guards that are great with the ball screen. So we're not going to be locked into what our tactics are going to be. That's going to be the strength of our personnel. Defensively, kind of the same thing. We might have a unit that is a really good pressing unit or a pressing team But the next year, maybe because we lost some of those guys that were very good, then, you know, we're going to do what we need to do tactically to give ourselves the best chance to win.
Three things that you said that's going to stick in. I want to make sure people saying availability, coachability, adaptability are the three keys that you're looking for as far as players and into your program and how you want to coach it.
Yeah. The ability piece, you know, obviously you got to be on the court, you know, to get reps. And then, you know, we talk about coachability a lot, and it's coachability is not yes, coach, and then you go make the same mistake or you don't listen to actually what was being said. To me, the act of coachability is applying what was said and going and doing that to the best of your ability. Adaptability is more for us as coaches because we got to be adaptable day to day. We might write up the best practice plan of the year, and then all of a sudden we got a guy out because of an injury, and we got another guy out because of sickness. So we got to be adaptable. I think another one after coachability for our players, we talk about a lot about dependability, like the trust piece of on the floor, like playing for each other, not playing with each other. Like you've got to trust that the guys next to you are doing their job so you can do your job at a high level.
And we're going to go into some quick little rapid fire, fun type of questions. You can expand on a little bit if you'd like. Who's your favorite coach outside of your dad? Who's your favorite coach to study or learn from?
Man, rapid fire. Okay. I would say I don't have a specific name. I listen to several coaching podcasts, and I feel like I learn from every coach that's on there that's sharing information about what they do systematically. I would say from the professional level down, I really love what, and he's an Oregon guy, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Heat coach, Spoelstra, right? He's from Oregon, I think. So I just love some of what they do because they play more of a European style, and I think he does a great job like understanding like there's one or two guys that are going to be the dominant like playmaking guys, but then you've got a guy like Duncan Robinson who is kind of a specialist, and he's able to adapt him to still be able to be valuable out on the floor. So I love some of what they do. College-wise, gosh, I mean, there's so many good coaches that I just try to steal stuff from. Everything from Division I coaches all the way down to junior college and anything in between. So I know I'm not giving you great names, but it's more like taking things from pretty much every coach I see or talk from.
If you could schedule, well, this year you guys play Oregon State and Gonzaga, correct, in the preseason?
Yeah, exhibition games.
Two big, huge games.
Yep.
If you could schedule a dream matchup for Western Oregon, who would it be and why?
Gonzaga's pretty cool because their head coach was my dad's point guard at Cresswell, Mark Few, back in the day. So I was a ball boy when he was playing. So that was the connection to Gonzaga. So that's pretty cool. So we can check that one off the list. Other high-level Division I's that I would love to play Purdue. I just think Matt Painter does a great job. Like that would be a dream to go there and play those guys. I've always had a super high level of like how they do things. That would be really cool. And then obviously like some of the historical ones would be like Kansas, just to play like in Allen Fieldhouse or Kentucky. So I'm not sure they're going to reply to any emails anytime soon, but those are definitely on the bucket list.
What's your favorite part of the game as a coach? Is it the practice part? Is it the game management? Is it just being around the team on the bus? Like, what's your favorite part of being a coach?
Yeah, I would say just the preparation piece. Like, so like we talk about like we prep for 90. That's kind of our little saying, right? We prep for 90. The 90 is the 90 seconds in the locker room after the game when you win, and you go in and it's just your program. There's nobody else. It's your players, it's your coaches, and it's really, that's it. It's your players. Now that you do have support staff, but they're not really in the locker room. So like all of the hours, all of those things, we prep for 90, like that 90 seconds of, I call it bliss. And I talked to the guys about this earlier this week, that there are very few times in your life that you feel like that sort of bliss. Marriage, have children, like there's blissful moments, like there's not, when it's, you know, it's just your group that did that. So like that's super, that's a fun part. And then just watching the kids get better. Like that's, to me, that's really, really cool.
Like the 90 second, prepare for the 90 second, the joy after getting the win, right?
Yeah, and the locker room by yourselves. Players.
One word you would describe the this year's 25-26 Western Oregon men's basketball team?
Connected. I'd say connected. Like this group is, they've done everything we've asked up to this point. And to bring in like essentially 15 new guys. Now we had 5 returners from Western Oregon's team last year. And then we brought in 10 true new guys, but those five returners aren't really returners because it's new to them as well. So like, it's how they've connected in such a short amount of time and how much that they are supporting each other. Now, obviously that's going to be tested, right? When we start identifying roles and what we need them to do. But like, I think we're going to be a super connected group.
Well, Coach, we appreciate your time today, out your busy schedule, coming and joining us on the show. That's going to wrap it up here. We do encourage everybody to pay attention to Western Oregon this upcoming season. They're focused on development and the exciting surrounds around Oregon college basketball community. Thank you, Coach, for coming on the show.
Fellas, I appreciate it, man. I look forward to seeing your respective teams play this year. So thanks for the invite, man. It was awesome.
Yeah, definitely appreciate it. You have to come check out that MLK Day, Southridge versus Benson.
Absolutely, for sure. Yes.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. Well, that'll do it today for this episode of Buckets in the 503. Stay tuned for more as we give you more episodes coming forward.